Our Bible study tonight is in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 17 to 19, a church leader's biblical way to direct wealthy believers. We learn from our study of 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 through 16, that local church leaders must be aware that material possessions can be a tremendous stumbling block to their living a godly life and hence serving the Lord well. However, if church leaders can be tripped up by the possessions that they have, believers under the oversight of leaders are also open to the same failure. And 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 17 to 19 directs how leaders are to direct other wealthy believers. Now, generally, it's the exception to the rule that you have a church where you have wealthy believers, but often, you know, there are some who have money and they can buy a lot of things or purchase a lot of things that other believers don't. Well, let's read the verses and then we'll look at them. Beginning at verse 17 of 1 Timothy chapter 6, 17 through 19. Charge them that are rich in this world, that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God, who gives us richly all things to enjoy. That they do good, that they be rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to share or communicate, laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against the time that is to come, that they may really lay hold of eternal life. This doesn't mean that you do this for salvation, but this is talking about entering into the life, the real life of eternity that God's talking about. Okay, local church leaders are to direct, or they're to instruct, parangelo in the Greek, believers rich in this age to heed three directives on their values. And these values are in verse 17. First of all, they must be taught, wealthy leaders, believers, must be taught not to be proud. Hupsalophroneo. They shouldn't be high-minded or proud because they are rich. People wealthy in this life are easily tempted to think that they are more valuable and honorable than poor believers. And of course, that attitude is sin. And that's an attitude that no believer is to have. One thing, if you ever are in a situation and you suddenly come into a lot of money, the last thing you could think is, well, God must think I'm better than the other believers in the church because I'm wealthier than the other believers. That's the last thing we should do. First thing we need to do is to be humble and to be grateful to the Lord that He's provided us a greater opportunity to serve Him. That's what riches are. Riches are a greater opportunity to serve the Lord because, as we're going to see later on, we certainly can't take it with us. When you leave this life, everything, including the individual retirement account, the property, the car, everything stays, even the lawn tractor. I mean, it all stays. We don't take a bit of it with us. Second, materially wealthy believers have to be taught not, and this is idolatrously, not to put their trust in, elpizo, uncertain riches. The word uncertain is adalotes. The cause of false pride is wealth can quickly vanish or fail, proving to be a false idol of security. There's a proverb that Solomon, one of the richest people who has ever lived, said, you need to keep your eye on the little goats that you're having out in the pasture and make sure that they're continuing to produce. Because he said, riches surely have wings as an eagle and they fly away. In other words, if you collect any money, it doesn't take long and boom, it's gone. And riches has a way of doing that. They just go and they disappear very, very quickly. So we need to remember that riches can vanish like that. Something can come along, boom. It's gone. I remember when we had the stock market crunch, like 2008, and Microsoft, the owner of Microsoft, Bill Gates, lost, I forget how many billions of dollars in value just because the market went down and the value of his company. I mean, he still had many billions left, but you know, every day the stock is moving up and down and his value is shifting in terms of millions, but he lost billions when that market went down. So we have to remember that riches are uncertain, they can fade. So we can't make them our God. Third, the wealthy believers are to be taught instead to put their trust in God, who gives us all things for our enjoyment. All that is good comes from the hand of our Creator, not from the wealth that He provides. So we must worship and serve the Lord and not money. There's a wonderful verse that Jesus gave us in Matthew chapter 6, verse 24. Jesus said, "No man can serve two masters, for he will either hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." Mammon was another word for money. And that's very true. Either money is your God or God is your God. You can't serve both. So the point is, keep your eye off of the money and keep your eye on the Lord. The Lord is the only real stability, the real security that we have. I'll never forget when we had a board, when I first came to Neepog Church. At one particular point, we had six or seven men on the board. And every single one of the men at one point had his job threatened. One man was a CPA, all through. And I looked at him and I said, "Well, mine's probably more threatened than what I realized too." But I think the Lord put us all on the docket where we recognized that it could vanish like that. And he did it just to teach us to rely upon him. We have to look to the Lord. So don't be proud, and then don't put our trust in uncertain riches, but trust rather in the Lord. Now, local church leaders are to direct or to instruct believers who are rich in this age to apply these three directives on their values to edifying ministry conduct. You have to have proper values before you get into proper ministry conduct. Well, the conduct follows in verses 18 and 19. First of all, local church leaders are to direct and instruct wealthy believers to use the above-directed values on wealth to do good or to confer benefits. What good is it for a Christian if he has lots and lots and lots of money and he doesn't do anything with it? And then either the rapture occurs or he dies. What good is it? What does he have to show for the Lord? Nothing. The best thing we can do is to think, how can I invest this money that I'm not going to take with me in a way that's going to produce eternal values? And then work from that vantage point. That's the only way to go, because we're not going to take it with us. It's a tremendous truth. We have to confer good benefits. Namely, local church leaders are to direct and instruct wealthy believers to be rich in good works, to be generous, eumetadotos, and sharing. Now, I know that some people teach you're supposed to give all your money away. Jesus did recommend that to the rich young ruler because he knew the rich young ruler was covetous. That's why he was holding on to it. But the Lord isn't indicating that we shouldn't take care of our own family, but it does indicate that we need to be generous, we need to be sharing. We have been given an opportunity. If you've suddenly come into money, you've been given an opportunity to do something with it that can really help people who can't help themselves. Okay, that being the case, we look around and say, how can I genuinely help this person in a way that's not going to enable them to just look to me, but how can I equip them, or how can I do something for the Lord that's really going to make a difference? That's what we need to do. Now, in connection with this command, 1 John chapter 3, verse 17 reveals that leaders are to instruct wealthy believers unconditionally to share of their wealth with needy believers. And not only if the needy are good money managers, but even if they've gotten into trouble by their own mismanagement. Many years ago, we had a board meeting. I'll never forget it. I don't think any of the board members on the board are with us now. And we knew of a couple of believers in the congregation that were really hurting, but they'd gotten into trouble by their own mismanagement. And there was this debate that went on, do we as a church have a responsibility, do we as Christians have a responsibility towards them because they got themselves into trouble? Well, I read this verse and I said, does it say that help the needy only if they're good money managers? It doesn't say that. If they're needy, help them. And sometimes you have to keep their head above water and give them food, otherwise they're not going to have food to eat. We've been in situations where there have been believers in our church that did not have food and did not have money for the food for the next meal. That was it. And so this is where the food pantry came in and really helped them out and tied them over for a couple of days until they did have the money and so forth. So it's not only if the needy are good money managers, but even if they got themselves into trouble with their own mismanagement. And this is where those who are good money managers sometimes automatically are responsible before the Lord to help. Now, hopefully people learn to be better money managers, but that's not always the case. So there is a responsibility to help a person in need, even if they got themselves into trouble themselves. Now, the motivation for such liberality is to arise from the realization that this giving ministry is an investment for eternal returns, whereby one uses his earthly wealth to build up eternal rewards. Verse 19, laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against the time to come, that they may really lay hold of eternal life, or really grab onto it. Paul explained that rich believers are to be taught to be generous in sharing of their material wealth with materially needy believers, for doing so stores up, apothesaurizo, for themselves a good foundation for the life to come, the life in heaven. Now, this statement reflects the teaching of Jesus in Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 and 20. And I'll read that passage as well. Matthew chapter 6, verse 19 says, lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust doth corrupt and where thieves break through and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. I think that, yes, that is our theme verse for the church. We read that every now and then. And of course, Jesus told the rich young ruler, to sell your possessions and so forth, and you'll have treasure in heaven. I honestly believe that every time a believer contributes towards the Lord's work, God is keeping the books in heaven. And he has promised to reimburse us here so that we can continue to minister, but he's keeping a record of the total amount of giving that you've given over the years in heaven. And someday I believe that there are going to be rewards for that. Because remember the Trudeau's here today, they had their slides and so forth. We have been supporting them for 27 years. I would imagine we'd be surprised if we looked at the total amount of money, but they've needed that. And look what's happened. The church, we saw people being baptized, young children who they discipled, now out reaching other villages for Christ. We've invested in that. And God hasn't forgotten that investment, so that's important. And of course, the Trudeaus are grateful for the fact that we've been able to help them as well. So, in effect, Paul with Jesus taught that a believer can actually convert his earthly wealth into eternal riches by using that wealth to do God's will by donating the money. And this is where Luke 12, 33 to 34, laying up yourselves treasures in heaven and so forth. So in doing this, those with earthly wealth can actually lay hold of the life that is truly life. I do know of wealthy people who have given a lot. There was a man my father knew who gave $400,000 a year, I think it was, to missions. He was a very wealthy man. He owned a yacht down in Louisiana. And he would take people out on the yacht. He'd make business deals and so forth. And of course, the yacht was pretty pricey too. But he says, I do this as a ministry because I'm in this kind of business. If I can make these contracts with these people, I can afford to give hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to missions. So I do it. And you know, you have to hand it to them. There are different ways that people minister. So local church leaders are responsible to direct believers with material wealth in this life to heed three values. Not to be haughty because they possess what others do not have. Not idolatrous to put their trust in uncertain material riches that can easily, quickly vanish, but to trust humbly in the Lord who gives us all things that are good in the material world to enjoy. Then local church leaders must thus direct the wealthy to the actions of being in good works, being generous in giving of their wealth to meet the needs of other believers unconditionally, as a means of converting earthly wealth into eternal rewards, that they might really lay hold on what constitutes true life before God. So the application is, may we local church leaders instruct these things and may our hearers heed them as well. I've made this statement before in adult Sunday school class and a couple of times, and I can use this as an illustration as well. As many of you know, I'm kind of a fad of investing in the stock market, mutual funds, and so forth. I can honestly profess before you that the contributions that I have made to the Lord have produced a much more profound return on investment than investing in the stock market. Now, I believe, yes, I have to have retirement and so forth like that. But I have seen the Lord dramatically bless, specifically in relationship to giving. In And if I've increased it, he bountifully comes back. And you try this again, and here it comes. And of course, that's biblical. We mention this every Sunday morning in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, 6 to 10. So I encourage people to do that, you know, give a little bit. And not just, I'm talking about the church, give to the missionaries, you know, and see the Lord bless as you do that. And you might want to just take a special little offering and see what happens. I heard of an elderly lady who was on Social Security who was trusting the Lord. And when she died, five missionary families suddenly broke out into cold sweat. They found that after she had died, by faith, she was supporting these five missionary families. And when she went home to be with the Lord, you know, the giving had dried up because that was it. But she was living on Social Security. No way on Social Security you're going to keep five missionary families in the field. But God had blessed her with the gift of giving and had kept bringing the money in. So, you know, she's going to get a tremendous reward, I believe, in heaven because of her contributions to the Lord. So remember, riches are an opportunity for an eternal investment. And I hope that we would all get excited about that and serve the Lord.